for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. It was a surreal scene in Richmond yesterday as lawmakers meet for their one-day veto session. Delegates under a tent outside, masks on, no ties, and blaring horns from nearby protesters. Line workers at Valley Poultry Plants express fears that new safety measures implemented recently are not enough. And one local family doctor says Harrisonburg may be reporting so many COVID-19 cases because maybe there's more testing in Harrisonburg, not necessarily because the virus is more prevalent. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, April 23rd. A surreal scene at the state capitol on Wednesday. Almost 100 members of Virginia's House of Delegates outside under a giant tent for their one-day veto session. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain was there and filed this report.
Sitting at socially distanced tables, many with masks, the delegates got to work against the backdrop of a sunny day and an incessant chorus of car horns from a parade of protesters. Beginning the proceedings, Speaker Eileen Filicorn says crises like the Spanish flu and world wars haven't stopped the General Assembly before.
Nor will the pandemic of today thwart our work to do the people's business.
Even still, Filicorn did push a change in the rules of the 400-year-old institution that would have allowed them to meet electronically. That effort didn't muster the two-thirds support needed to make it happen. Here's Republican delegate Todd Gilbert.
What if the technology doesn't work? What if this goes down? What if this doesn't work? How do I do my constitutional duty if I can't access the session appropriately, if I can't engage in debate?
So they plugged on in person, voting to extend foreclosure and rent relief to people impacted by COVID-19, postpone a raise in the minimum wage, and create a COVID-19 relief fund. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Another surprising moment in an unusual day. Late in the afternoon, Speaker Eileen Filicorn got dizzy and fell behind the podium. She was not hurt and continued to preside while seated. Democrats in both chambers in full control of the General Assembly this year for the first time in a generation voted to approve amendments by Governor Ralph Northam to delay many of their long-sought priorities. That includes a delay on granting local government employees the right to collectively bargain, and pushing back a raise in the state's minimum wage until later next year. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has more on that.
When Democrats took control of the House and Senate earlier this year, one of their top priorities was increasing the minimum wage. That led to a lot of drama between progressive and moderate Democrats about how much and how soon. Then the pandemic hit, and the governor suggested the first increment of the increase be delayed from January to May. Republican Senator Bill DeStef of Virginia Beach says now is not the time to pay low-wage workers more.
Instead of being sympathetic to these businesses in their worst time, we're tightening the screws. And instead of seeing our restaurants reopen, they're going to remain closed. Instead of seeing our hotels reopen, we're going to see them up for sale.
Delegate Lee Carter is a Democrat from Manassas, and he says low-wage workers need a raise as soon as possible.
These people who we are saying are essential to the functioning of our society, who we are telling you have to go out there every day and interact with people in close proximity in a lot of cases, we are saying to these people that you are not worth a pay raise come January.
The House ended up approving the governor's amendment delaying the increase from January to May. In the Senate, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax broke a tie in favor of the governor's amendment. That means the minimum wage will go up to $9.50 an hour on May 1st, 2021. I'm Michael Pope.
The Virginia Department of Health now reports more than 10,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Virginia, but the actual number of infections is probably much higher because of limited testing. By the end of the day Wednesday, 349 people had died from the disease, according to VDH, including 13 confirmed deaths at Accordius Long-Term Care Facility in Harrisonburg. Well, the Shenandoah Valley's poultry processing plants have continued to operate through the pandemic. They are considered essential businesses under the governor's closure order, but line workers at those plants have expressed fears that new safety measures implemented recently are not enough. WMRA's Calvin Pinn reports.
Harrisonburg Vice Mayor Sal Romero says he has heard from hundreds of poultry plant workers over the past few weeks since COVID-19 was declared a global pandemic. Their concerns include a lack of personal protective equipment, or PPE, and the ongoing working conditions that make physical distancing difficult.
You know, for the most part, people are concerned that they're still very close within each other, very close proximity. The fact that the plant is not notifying everybody or quarantining everybody when somebody becomes infected, the fact that people are not getting flexible, leave.
Romero said some companies have taken proactive steps to protect workers, but also said the effort seems to be inconsistent across the area's plants.
Things have evolved over the last month for better in some plants, mm-hmm. not much in others.
Hobie Bowen is the president of the Virginia Poultry Federation, headquartered in Harrisonburg, representing the operators of the plants. He said he's communicated with the Federation's member companies about their safety measures, some of which include health and temperature screenings of employees, barriers and tents to encourage social distancing during breaks, and sending home anyone showing symptoms of COVID-19 or who has been exposed to a positive case. He said there is an entire shift dedicated to sanitizing common areas. The close quarters natures of poultry processing, however, still makes physical distancing challenging while on shift. Line workers are shoulder to shoulder.
In a lot of manufacturing, it is challenging to achieve that 6-foot barrier, and plants have established partitions in order to mitigate risks along those lines.
The question remains if those measures are enough, and advocates for workers don't know which plants are taking the necessary steps to protect them. Romero has kept in close contact with the local poultry processing plants, but said accountability is a challenge, because the concerns he has heard from workers in the community are somewhat random.
That's the problem. It's anecdotal. I think one of my concerns is that, some of the plants are doing a better job, but the accountability measure is really... It's a matter of perspective, I think, but I still keep hearing from employees who are concerned about they're not doing enough.
He has also been in contact with legislators and health officials, as well as Bowen, to communicate concerns from the plant's workers. Romero also emphasized the need for guidance from lawmakers in Richmond. Poultry processing is one of many essential businesses in the Valley that present challenges to physical distancing. To that end, though, he said local governments are limited in their authority to hold those plants accountable.
The local government is unable to a great extent, to monitor and implement that those things are being followed. We need greater guidance and more specific guidance to those sort of businesses. And the poultry plants are a great example.
Poultry plants are included under food and agriculture as one of the 16 critical infrastructure sectors to continue operating during the pandemic. Bowen said the crisis has disrupted the industry as supply chains have shifted from restaurants to grocery stores.
The industry is also facing some tough economic challenges with the significant decline of the food service sector. We're really just trying to keep it all going to produce the food we all need while doing everything possible to protect our people.
Outbreaks of the coronavirus have also forced food processing plants across the country, including those that process poultry, to suspend their operations, or in some cases, close entirely. The Wayne Farms Company has had to shut down 11 of its chicken processing facilities across the South due to COVID-19. According to Dr. Laura Cornegay, director of the Central Shenandoah Health District, if an employee tests positive, it is their decision to share their identity with their employer, but the employer is notified of an exposure nonetheless. Romero has also urged the Virginia Department of Health to focus on neighborhoods and areas outside of the poultry plants as potential spots for an outbreak.
Is it neighborhood-based? Is it, specific sector of the community? Uh-huh. And what are we doing to address it?
Advocates have been reaching out to Latino communities, whose members make up a large portion of workers at the plants. That outreach has included Spanish language updates from Romero through his Facebook page, as well as general information about COVID-19. Sylvia Whitney Beitzel volunteers with New Bridges Immigrant Resource Center to translate Governor Ralph Northam's press briefings and highlight other important facts regarding rights during the pandemic that otherwise would not be accessible for most of the poultry workers.
The few hours that they do have to kind of think about their own personal lives, there's a lot of lack of information.
For the meantime, Romero has encouraged poultry workers and others in the community to call the human resources departments at the local poultry plants to voice their concerns. For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
Learn more about that story at WMRA.org or on the app. Dr. Greg Gestad is a physician at Harrisonburg Family Practice and a clinical professor of family medicine for the University of Virginia. I reached out to him for his perspective as a physician seeing patients on the COVID-19 crisis. Dr. Gested emphasized that his views are his own and not necessarily those of other physicians at the practice or at UVA. I began by asking him what he's seeing in his practice now.
Over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 weeks, there was a gradual increase in what we call telemedicine, where we see patients basically through computer screens as much as we can. And initially, we were having patients screened at the door so they would not come in. And over time, you know, say we saw 20 to 30 patients in a day, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, two patients would be coming in looking like they had the flu, and we'd gown up and have the nurses swab them, and they would not have the flu. And that gradually got more and more and more and more. And now we're seeing a pretty steady, at least in my practice anyway, a good steady, I'd say 1/4 of my patients who are showing up, they're like, "Doc, man, I got a fever of 102 and a headache, and I just feel like garbage. You think I should go get tested?" And then I have to explain to them that, you know, you can't go get tested. There are no tests. You know, there's no widely available tests, and there haven't been this entire time. So I just tell them to hunker down at home, don't go to work, and follow the CDC guidelines. Before there's any symptoms is actually when the virus is being spread just by breathing.
Right.
And that is the crazy part of this. So that's why it's so difficult to prevent. That's why social distancing is so important. That's why wearing a mask is so important. Because most people are sick for quite a while before they even know it, and that's when they're really spreading it. It's obvious if you're sick to stay away from you. It's not so obvious when you're not sick, and people are just completely disregarding that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the testing issue, because Governor Ralph Northam announced this week that he's forming a task force to try to better address the outbreak, including ramping up testing for the novel coronavirus. And Virginia has been criticized for lagging behind in testing. What do you think needs to be done to solve it?
That's beyond the scope of what I do. That's a public health issue. That's a manufacturing problem. That's a logistics problem. This is where the oversight of a centralized task force overseeing the entire nation's problem would come into play. Mm-hmm. So being criticized locally for not having enough tests, I don't know what that translates into. Did Governor Northam just ignore the issue? Probably not. He probably lost the bidding war to Arizona over the reagents or whatever else he needed to make this happen. So all these things just put together, I don't understand it.
Yeah. And so what I hear you saying, and this is why you emphasize so much that even before people get sick, they don't know if they're carrying the virus, and that's why it's so important to physically distance and to wear the mask if you have to go out and so on.
Exactly. Unless you have an N95 or better grade mask, wearing something over your face, whether it's just a homemade mask or you know, a T-shirt that you just sort of make that goes around and covers your nose and mouth, that protects other people from you if you are sick and you don't know it yet, or maybe you do know it. It still protects others around you when you're sick. Wearing a mask is one of the most selfless, kindest things you can do right now when you go out and about.
Well, let me ask you this question. It is based on your observation. As you know, Harrisonburg has become one of the hottest hotspots for confirmed cases in Virginia in terms of the number of cases of the disease per capita. Why do you think that is?
I think the cases around here are burgeoning, you know, from a data perspective, because somebody got hold of some tests and ran them on a large number of people.
Oh, so you're saying that we might have more reported cases in some places just because we may have a little more testing there, and that's kind of a measurement effect that's independent of how many people are actually infected.
I suspect that is the case.
Yeah. Dr. Gested, thanks very much for your insights. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, sir. Be safe. Take care of yourself.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And you'll find that interview along with all of our COVID-19 coverage at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. The Virginia Lottery reports a drop in profits of 28% in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. The Virginian Pilot reports that sales were down by $45 million in March compared to March of 2019. Lottery profits go toward the state's K-12 public school system. Sales are down 10% for the fiscal year so far. Kevin Hall is executive director of the Virginia Lottery Board. He expects the drop to continue, even though lottery tickets are still being sold at essential businesses, such as grocery stores. A full disclosure, the Virginia Lottery underwrites programming on WMRA. Scientists at Virginia Tech have created a new test to identify COVID-19. The FDA granted an emergency approval this week, allowing testing to begin immediately. From Virginia Public Radio, Robbie Harris reports.
First responders, healthcare workers, and people in confined settings populations will be first to get the new COVID-19 tests developed by a team of scientists at Virginia Tech.
We have a test that's been working very well. We think it's going to be extremely accurate.
Biomedical Director Mike Friedlander spearheaded the COVID-19 testing initiative.
We'll be able to turn it around in many cases by the end of the same day. We'll be reporting results back to the health districts.
Scientists here have been working around the clock for months to develop the test.
It's a very sensitive test. It detects as low as 8 to 10 copies of the virus in a sample.
Carla Finkelstein and her team use something called reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction. That makes it easier to determine if coronavirus genes are present in the sample.
The key here is that you go from a few molecules in the virus that they're present in the sample to actually an amplification of millions of them in just a few hours. That's what actually gives us this high throughput capacity and sensitivity.
Finkelstein says there have been no false negatives identified so far. Testing for the public will be done by local and area health departments and analyzed at Virginia Tech labs. In Blacksburg, I'm Robbie Harris.
Well, time now for the latest installment of our series from Virginia Public Radio, answering listener questions about COVID-19.
This is the COVID-19 Minute, expert answers to your questions. Listener Anna Haupt asks, what is it about this virus that allows it to infect some people and make them sick enough to put them on a ventilator and possibly kill them versus others who have no symptoms? At Virginia Commonwealth University's Medical Center, Chief of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Gonzalo Behrman, offers this explanation.
The same thing happens with influenza. There are thousands and thousands, if not millions, of influenza infections across the country every year, but not everyone gets super sick. So there is some difference in the virulence of the virus. But on top of that, there's also variation in human beings, in our immune systems, in our response to infectious disease threats.
Also, he notes, some people have immune systems which are overly active, not only killing virus, but causing damage to the lungs. Listener Chris Harris owns a cleaning company. He wonders what terms hospital cleaners use to describe their process and whether he needs to wear the same protective equipment as medical personnel. Again, Dr. Behrman.
There's daily and terminal disinfection. Terminal disinfection is when you clean a room after the patient has left. A medical grade mask is not necessary for community casual contact with others. That's just not needed. However, if you are a healthcare worker, you're taking care of a suspected or known COVID-19 case, then you should have higher level personal protective equipment, which includes a fitted PFR N95 mask.
More of your questions and expert answers in our next report. I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
You can, of course, email your question to wmra@jmu.edu. Be sure to type COVID question in the subject heading. We'll pass your question along. A pay discrimination lawsuit has been filed on behalf of about 250 women who worked for the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality prior to 2019. Two former and two current employees filed the suit on Monday. They said the agency violated the Equal Pay Act of 1963 by paying female employees less than male employees. That's according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Finally today, 50 years ago, millions of people participated in the very first Earth Day. But the pandemic and stay-at-home orders have dramatically changed plans for this major anniversary. From Partner Station VPM, Charles Fishburn reports.
Earth Day founder Dennis Hayes says 1 billion people were supposed to take to the streets.
Pope Francis was to address a huge crowd in St. Peter's Square with a message about climate change. We had things that were being done in soccer stadiums in Brazil and in plazas in Calcutta. We hope to have 750,000 people on the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Instead, organizers are calling for 24 hours of virtual activities like teach-ins and performances, and they're planning to take their 2020 efforts to the ballot box in November with voter registration and education drives.
In the belief that this election really matters.
Charles Fishburn, WMRA News.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.